Welcome to the award-winning Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashinger, covering metaphysics, ETs, shamanism, and channeling. Here you will find spiritual inspiration from today's thought leaders, along with cutting-edge insights from our interstellar brothers and sisters and ancient shamanic wisdom. Now, here's a new episode of Dare to Dream with your host, Debbie Dashinger.
Welcome to Dare to Dream. This is the award-winning podcast that dares to ask the big questions and go far beyond the veil. Today on Dare to Dream, I'm joined by the Cosmic Channel, back for a second time, Tyler Ellison, who brings through the ET being, Ryo of the Sasani. So stay tuned as we deep dive into your soul's destiny, galactic wisdom, and unlocking your divine power. Dare to Dream just won another award called the Best Metaphysical Podcast from Million Podcasts, which is actually a very cool title for them because there are currently well over 5 million podcasts existing today. Yes. And this podcast is sponsored by Dr. Dane here and Access Consciousness. They do energy work out into the world. So if you'd like to become a facilitator, go into the classes, go to Dr. Dane here, HEER.com. You can get your free starseed report and video, learn your galactic origins, go to debbiedashinger.com/starseed. That's Debbie with an I, Dashinger with a C. So it's debbiedashinger.com/starseed. Now, every month I'm doing galactic shamanic healings for folks. I'd love you to join me. I have so many people coming from around the world. And yes, for those in other countries, I do offer a replay. It's not a problem. These are 75 to 90 minute sessions, and people have had outstanding experiences. You can sign up now for next month. And actually, this is the same link for every month. It's at debbiedashinger.com/healing. And finally, I am speaking aboard a Mystery School at Sea cruise, going to Greece, going to Turkey, two countries I've never been to. We're going to all the major sites, the ancient divine sites where oracles were, the divine goddess was, and more. We have incredible people aboard the ship, part of our presenters who are actually taking on these tours. So I'm so ready for this. If you'd like to join us on the Mystery School at Sea.com, do so. Cabins are already filling up. All you need to do is leave a deposit. Use my name for the referral and you are in. It is in March 2026. Mystery School at Sea.com. And now on to the show. My guest, Tyler Ellison, is a magnetic force of ancient magic and modern mysticism, a metaphysical magician and acupuncturist. Tyler fuses the realms of spirit and science, guiding those who seem to unlock the divine power within. He's a certified instructor of the Universal Healing Tao, and he's known for his channeling of Ryoka, a hybrid ET being from the Sasani civilization. Tyler also communicates with Egyptian gods, Goetic spirits, and archangels. If you'd like to learn more about him, go to thegalacticguide.com. And with that, I welcome the amazing Tyler Ellison back to Dare to Dream. It is great to have you here, my friend.
Thanks for having me, Debbie. Good to be back here for the third time. And what a pleasure. How's everything been? I know you were saying you got back from a major retreat in upstate New York. It sounded like that was an incredible experience, the power of the lioness.
Yes. I was sharing with you, life-changing. I mean, this woman who led the retreat is a galactic channel, which, you know, I love. I'm very particular to the galactics and being connected and forming friendships with them, learning from them. So it was beautiful. I met some incredible people. I went tubing down the river, which was joyful for me. And I will say, you know, I perform music there. That's something I do. I've been doing since I'm young. And yeah, we had a galactic costume ball. And I'll show the folks what I showed you, the ones who are watching us on either YouTube or on Rumble or on Spotify for the video. But this was me dressed as my lioness self, my galactic being. And so it was so fun. And I fell in love as an ex-New Yorker, someone who grew up there. I re-fell in love with New York, specifically upstate New York. Oh, gorgeous, gorgeous territory. So that was very recent, and I'm just also happy to be home for a while.
Oh, totally. The home vibes are kind of, I find, enjoyable, and they're a much slower pace than actually being out in the world and doing these types of events. I find that has such a momentum to it. The last time I was in upstate New York was to experience the Chapel of Sacred Mirrors Chasm, the art museum from Alex and Alison Gray. Have you heard of that or have been there before?
No, but I want to check that out.
It is the best. It is the best. I am working to eventually do channeling workshops and retreats there. There's nothing official yet, but that is, like, for myself, just as an enthusiast of psychedelic art and culture, what they have in New York of COSM, it's like the top place for that. And I think you'd get a big kick out of it. It's COSM, and the whole premise, it's like a type of, how to describe it, as like a mansion, small home that is also his art museum. People stay there, properties that can be hiked and navigated, full moon gatherings with like a lot of psychedelic community and dancing people and fire spinners. Like the whole thing is fantastic and very accessible. So happy to pass that nugget of gold on to you. It has benefited me quite a bit.
That's super cool you're telling me that because we loved it so much. We came home talking about buying land there, not to live forever. I'm already from New York. I know what winters are like. That's not my scene. I like California, but to live there part-time, 100%. It was one of the most peaceful places I've been. And it's on my astrocartography. So, how does it get any better than that?
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. So this is like destined to be a place that will be successful and energetic for you.
Yeah, it's really good lines. New York, Europe, California, very good for me. And I also want to follow up with you along those lines because yes, for people like you and I who speak, you channel, I do other things on stage, and sometimes I'm just there to MC and moderate. But these going to the events, they're very filling for me. I love, love, love them. And I love when people walk up and say, I listen to your show, or I've been to your programs, or I'm like, oh, it's so beautiful to meet you. And as a Cancerian in my sun sign, I love being home as well. So are you traveling a lot right now, or is there a lot coming up for you, or are you pretty much peaceful and staying
So
home?
I was traveling for a bit, and now I'm in the peaceful phase. I don't have anything lined up until April of 2026 for my next travel and performance. That's going to be the channel panel in LA, which I shouldn't say too much about that. I should, because I
What?
nothing official yet. But yeah, my friend Rob does the channel panel. That's where me and you made our connection. And he's got one lined up for West Virginia, but he's also working on other ones. I don't want
Him. I'm texting
to
him as soon as we're done.
I forget sometimes. I shouldn't, if I'm giving too many details away ahead of time, I apologize, Mr. Rob, if you hear this. And
Which is so amazing. I just want to
yeah.
say as an aside that I literally just had an event canceled. There's actually a great reason why this event producer canceled it because he just purchased something so huge for our community. It's way better. But still, I was booked for a speaking gig. Without saying too much about that either, but it just got canceled. And so I'm free in April. And I live in LA. So
How is
anyway,
that?
this is perfect conversation. It really is. And I
Totally.
won't tell
Yeah.
Rob where it came from.
Oh, perfect. Perfect. We me and him were just together in Japan, actually. So he's who I was traveling with, and we got back the 2nd, 3rd of July. So it's been like a little over 10 days back in the States, but it's definitely a momentum. And I really empathize with what you say about the feeling of nourishment from the retreats, from the activity. It's like, it's all I want to do. I mean, it's so fun being in that mode, being able to share these gifts, being around so many people that want to receive it. And it's almost like this craft, whatever you want to call it, of channeling or shamanic magic or what have you. It's like these skill sets become the fuel in the tank for the adventure. And I think that's the most exciting type of adventure. Home life is nice, and I relate to you with the cancer thing too, the moon power, because there is a beauty in the homey vibe. And at the same time, I keep looking around at the world. I'm in the East Coast. I'm in Delaware, so I'm sure it's different than what you have in LA. But I look around the world, and I find a lot of people just kind of like wind up toys, just the same day, the same routine over and over and over again. And I see that, and I think, I think we've all been in that. When I was younger, I think I found a beauty in that. But now that I'm a little older and I see that there's all these alternate ways of exploring life and spending time and energy, I look at what the society has, outlined. And to me, it's like insanity. It just feels so purposeless, other than like to make sure that the necessities are there. So home is weird, but it's good. And what I'm doing when I'm traveling, it's starting to feel more like the true home. The spiritual home. So those types of roles and those types of contexts are certainly shifting with time.
And the Japanese just love this. I think they're way more progressive than the Americans. They completely are into the UFOs, believing in all that. And they love these channeling experiences. They're deeply spiritual people. I'm sure that it was an incredible reception for both of you.
It was really nice. We had some small numbers. It was a retreat of intimacy. So we probably had 10 people, maybe less for both of them. We had one in Yamanakako Lake near Mount Fuji, and then a second group in Aomori, which is the northern part of Japan, where their original first peoples, the Jomon people, come from.
Oh, I know
So
them. Yes.
in both of those places, we had phenomenal CE5 success. And we also in Fuji specifically taught the participants how to get into the channeling state. So we brought them through three levels. This was over like one day. We brought them through three levels. One was channeling just their inner muse or their inner child, having them create with art. We leveled it up to, okay, let's channel the higher self. And we had them all partner up and do this. And the third level was an external guide or entity. And with all three, there was success. And this was a blending of Japanese speakers and English speakers. So we had no issues with people being able to partner up and go through these exercises. So we had Japanese people doing the channeling together, English speakers doing the channelings together. So everybody was able to get that higher self wisdom and very successful. And Japan is, I think, one of my favorite places to share this kind of work. And the culture's way open to it, because even if this ascension thing wasn't happening as like kind of the new age subject, their whole world is like, okay, we need to make offerings to the ancestors, and we need to make an offering to the mountain god at the mountain god shrine, all this really elaborate stuff. And it's not that everyone there's like that, but that's a part of their a big part of their world, and there's a lot of people there that are like that. And it definitely makes for a magical place. I think that much can be said. It makes for a very magical, collective energy.
It does sound magical. It sounds one, and even the experience you gave people sounds amazing, and that you were not only able to teach all of that in one day, but talking about ascension, that people are open, hungry right now so much that they were able to follow all of that, and it sounds like get somewhere with channeling, with an experience, with a partner. I find that it very exciting these times. That's the other piece of these times, is that there is this excitement about this incredible expansion happening. And I want to know, because even though I mentioned at the top that you channel Rayaka, you also channel Egyptian gods and these goetic spirits and the archangels. Do you channel them often? And what are they like to connect with for you?
Yeah, they're very different. They all have their own unique vibration and feeling quality. An alien will feel different than an angel. A Goetia is going to feel different than an Egyptian god from a certain time period. They all have a similarity in that they feel like energy beings when I'm channeling and accessing them, right? I feel them as a psychic presence, but their quality, their defining qualities as discrete, specific psychic presences, they're all different, all unique. With the Goetia, it's a lot of underworld power. And there's certain Egyptian gods like this too, like Thoth. When I first went to channel Thoth, Tehuti, I was expecting, okay, like let's bring his energy down, right, from the higher realms. And I'm getting like kind of a so-so connection doing that. And then I'm not sure who the entity was exactly that tipped me off, but some being was like, dude, no, he's in the underworld. Like that's like his heaven. Like you have to pull him up. So I found that there's certain Egyptian gods and goetic entities that have big underworld connections. And when drawing their wisdom, it's not like connecting up, it's like connecting down and in and then pulling that energy up. Some of it can be very powerful. When I first was working with Goetia, I almost vomited. Like it was like it was so much energy coming up. It was like pushing the It was disgusting, right? But pushing the contents of my stomach up. Like, I was like, oh man, like, this is really nuts. Nowadays, because I have formed a relationship with a lot of these beings, the energy is somewhat neutralized across the board. So, when I first began, it was like all those defining features and qualities. It would be like having kind of water thrown on the face, like very obvious, very on the nose. Now it's like all of those qualities are there, but if I want to access them, I sort of got to lean into it. There's a type of buffer that my aura has created that allows for me to have some space between myself and the entity. So when I'm taking their energy on, I'm not taking all of it on. Where in the past that was certainly happening, and that, you know, can lead to some issues, right? Psychological boundaries being blended, energy fields being blended. So as I've gotten older and I've worked with more beings, the buffer zone between me and their consciousness has gotten healthier. And they've all sort of taken on this, I don't want to say homogenous quality, but there's a neutral quality to when I perceive all of them. And from that neutral place, if I lean into it, I can get the very specific qualities of them.
That's so super cool. And are these beings that you can mindfully call in,
Sure.
or is it that you're channeling and all of a sudden there's this, because I've experienced that with some channelers, and all of a sudden there's a switch and the other being says, let me take this one and comes through.
It's more that's a really cool ability. I've seen that where people kind of pass the microphone from entity to entity. I don't channel in that way. It could be really fun to do. My logical mind is like, that's such a disorganized way to channel, but it could be really effective and really good. So I'm not bashing it. It's just not my style. With me, I will usually pick an entity beforehand that I want to commune with. I'll usually have a relationship I've built up with them over time. So visualization exercises, offerings, things like this that have helped make the connection between me and the target entity strong. And then when I go to channel them, I'm essentially layering visualizations on top of each other whilst creating altered states of consciousness that overlap. So the visualization, the altered state become this very strange and dreamy vibration, and it's there where the channeling begins. So I can do that with really any being, and I've noticed it's only getting stronger. There's only more information coming out. Like I'll in this path sometimes feel like I'm at the top of my craft and my ability, but I'm seeing in real time like, oh, there's way more levels than like what's coming through. Like this is like it's like if there were an ocean above us, right? The channeling we're getting is like one drop from that ocean coming off of like a stalactite or whatever in the cave, right? There's so much more energy there, and there's only going to be more revelation of that in the years to come and time to come.
Oh, Tyler, God, that's exciting. That's exciting, my friend. Thank you for sharing that. That also felt like a mic drop. All right. Well, I'll just say, preface this by whomever you would like to come through or feels they would like to field these questions. If it is okay to shift into the channeling, I would love to get some of my questions answered for all of us. How does that feel?
Certainly. Yeah, we can do that. I'll go ahead and alter my consciousness a little bit and bring usually Ryoka, that's the main entity I channel because he knows a lot. So even if you know, it's a new person I'm channeling for or a new topic or what have you, he seems to be able to talk at length about anything. So I'll bring him forth and we can start the questions from there. And then if another entity becomes needed or if there's a reason to shift, we certainly can bring that up with him. He may even have someone that wants to say something. So I will let you guys enjoy that process. I'll see you on the other side of the channeling state.
Beautiful. Thank you in advance to
You're
all
welcome.
of you.
Well, thank you. Hello, we thank you for joining us for this ecstatic co-creative interaction that we share with one another this here, this now of your collective and respective times. How are you?
Oh, I'm wonderful. And I loved our previous conversation. I thought you were exquisite at really going deep, giving me so much to consider, so much insight. So thank you. Welcome back.
It is our joy to be back in this way. And of course, we are eager to build upon the exciting topics and insights that we shared with one another in the last interaction. We understand that you have been going through many explorative processes involving the animal archetypes. And it's very exciting for us to observe because when a human takes on different animal symbolism, different animal forms, they temporarily act as an ambassador for that animal kind. And it's as if the collective consciousness of that specific animal species is able to experience for some time what it's like to be human through the person adorning their symbolism and their iconography. So it creates a strengthening of the telepathic link between the different forms of life here on Earth, humanity, and the different animals. So each time you do this, it is seen as a very exciting opportunity for the species involved.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I definitely had a lot of feeling of otherness while doing it, a lot of Sekhmet with a staff and a power that was not a little bit foreign to me, but felt incredibly delicious in my body and the way I was able to hold myself and perceive things. I welcome that energy and I'm happy to be an ambassador for the animals. Absolutely, especially the benevolent animals, I will say.
Oh, yeah. And the guardians of those species, one of them you named, Sekhmet, they, of course, are very excited to see that representation because it, to them, reveals that the ancient links are still integral and that human consciousness is expanding in a way where it can begin to absorb greater facets of energy and information from the surrounding world. In other words, when they see you artfully using your imagination, these different deities, they get incredibly excited because it means there's more opportunity for them to communicate with all of you. There's more synchronistic opportunity available. When you just see yourself as one character, one person, it's as if your imagination sort of sticks to the same patterns and the same scripts, which means your awareness will only notice certain things. But when you are willing to transform the personality through taking on these different costumes, through taking on these different symbols, now you are able to see as another. You are able to see from an expanded point of view. And this opens up the brain and mind to be more receptive to multidimensional information.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much. Yes,
Of course.
exciting.
You are so welcome.
Ryoka, I want to talk to you about the pole, the Earth, pole shifts specifically. So, regarding pole shifts, consciousness, and planetary changes, is it probable that the degree of Earth's pole shift is directly related to planetary consciousness? And how does human awareness influence large-scale events like pole shifts, like climate changes?
So there's a few things to keep in mind. When you talk about the pole shifting, this is something that has been happening and continues to happen. And what this means is the geographic North Pole and the electromagnetic North Pole are beginning to change. They are becoming less overlaid. So, what you call your magnetic North Pole is going through a shift. It is going through a locational shift. The pole shift is not necessarily the same as what you call a pole reversal or the poles flipping. These are two different things. So, the pole already shifts its location, and the possibility of a pole reversal or the two poles flipping They see something that has happened before in ancient times. When these types of things occur, they usually occur in ways that require large expanses of time. Because if these things were to happen all at once, it could create chaos on the surface level of your collective reality. So you are going through a pole shift now. A reversal of the poles, this is something that is likely to happen and will take a great deal of time in order to be fully realized and achieved. In terms of human consciousness, yes, absolutely. Human consciousness has a very great effect upon the pole shifting and ultimately what you call pole reversals. These types of planetary phenomenon are reflecting milestones and energetic dynamics taking place within your own consciousness. So, as your crown chakra opens in greater ways, you become sensitive to many higher sources. There's many celestial bodies above you. It's not as if you're dialed into just one star, you're dialed into many stars. The more open and well-structured the crown chakra, the more of that collective star world you can connect to. And as you start to connect with greater and greater groupings of stars, the energy of the crown chakra begins to spiral in greater and greater and greater ways. And on physical surface level reality, your North Pole, this translates as the location, the magnetic North Pole changing, shifting. So, as the crown chakra changes, the electromagnetic energy of the North Pole changes. As you know, top of the body has more of a positive charge, it's more yang in nature. Bottom of the body, negative charge, more yin in nature. In your alchemical process, the Kundalini processes, that which is above descends, that which is below rises, and the locations change.
That's incredible.
So, with your pole reversal, that is a type of phenomenon that reflects this type of evolutionary process happening on a species-wide level. So, by the time you've all gone through that alchemical activation, the planet will begin reflecting that through a potential reversal of the poles.
Yes. Are we currently on the brink? You said this takes a long time. Are we on the brink of a consciousness-triggered pole shift? And what signs should we be looking for? You mentioned about the crown chakra and so forth, but are there physical signs that we might see out in the world?
People's focus and interest expanding beyond that which was idolized in the past. So, when you see that people are beginning to focus on higher ideals, higher topics, higher forms of intellect, higher forms of science, higher forms of art, when you see that the focus is being elevated, this is a sign of a type of ascension process. It is a sign of a crown chakra upregulation process. It's as if the expectation of physical reality has become a higher expectation. That can only really occur when a person has higher experiences and are granted higher vantage points. So, your own collective focus, your own collective interest reveals which chakra is most active within the energy body of the species. You're finding now that there is a big fascination with ancient civilizations, quantum mechanics, space travel, particle physics, all types of innovations with AI, things like this. So, these are the upper chakras, the third eye chakra, being stimulated. So, just look at your culture and you'll see the changes.
Interesting. You know, regarding ancient civilizations, I want to talk a little bit about ancient monuments as dimensional portals. So, specifically the Sphinx, due to its water erosion patterns, it's estimated to be far older than mainstream archaeologists once claimed. So, was the Sphinx constructed by advanced human civilization, or was it done merely with or in combination with extraterrestrial assistance?
Combination.
combination.
Yes. So it wasn't just humans, it wasn't just ET beings. There's groups involved that transcend those two that are mentioned. So remember that there were many versions of humanity that all shared the planet. Some of them about the same stature of all of you, some of them a little bit shorter, some of them very short, some of them a little taller than all of you, some of them a lot taller than all of you. So many helping hands in the construction of the pyramids. Not all pyramids were constructed in the same way. The Sphinx is much older than the pyramids. The Sphinx of your Earth is not the only Sphinx. The Sphinx of your Earth is based upon an off-world Sphinx.
Is that Mars?
That is Mars. Yes. So, the beings of Orion, after they resolved certain conflicts within the Orion system, traveled to what you called Maldek, from Maldek to Mars, from Mars to Earth. So Mars represents one of the most recent past iterations of what you would call human hybrid civilization that is extraterrestrial in nature. So ancient Egypt, the land of Kem, and which you describe as the Martian civilization, which is a future version of the Orion civilizations, had a great deal of relationship. So the Sphinx is much older. And not all Sphinxes were built in the same way. The off-world Sphinxes, of course, constructed by what you would describe as extraterrestrial beings. But the Sphinxes constructed on Earth, and we are using that in the plural. These are collaborative ones.
Oh, so cool. So these Sphinx, are they stargates? Are they energetic transmitters? What was their original purpose, and what is its current purpose?
So the Sphinx can manifest as a multidimensional vehicle. So beneath the Sphinx, there are chambers where meditators would gather, and within the underground chambers beneath the Sphinx, they would use the structure of the Sphinx as you described. They would use it as a celestial gateway that they could project themselves through. This would allow for their energy body to take on the image and likeness of the Sphinx. So, whilst they were projecting in the other dimensions, they would have all of the capabilities associated with the Sphinx. It would make them masters of the elements and of whatever realm they found themselves projecting into. So, the Sphinx is a vehicle, the Sphinx is a stargate. And there are structures, chambers beneath the Sphinx, and some of these underground chambers and structures used to hold beings whom would use the Sphinx for projection. Beneath what you call ancient Egypt, there are underground networks that connect many of these locations. What you call your current Egypt is actually built on top of a civilization much older, and I don't mean that metaphorically. I mean that literally. There are ancient cities beneath what you call ancient Egypt. So,
This is actually something that fascinates me and that I'm researching. Welcome to my mind. But this idea that not only under Egypt, but also under Romania, under a portion in the United States, and several other countries, I think Iraq is the other one, that there are actually ancient tunnels even connecting all of these back to Egypt. Is this correct? What was its purpose? And they're giants. So when you're talking about that there were even giants living on the earth, it seems that there were very giant species who are utilizing this.
most certainly. So these tunnel networks have many access points, both above and below. So these underground networks plug into many of the sacred sites, many of the temples, many of the pyramids, as you have described, dispersed throughout the planet. And that's where they extend on the surface level. But these underground tunnels also descend further into the earth. And it is deep within the earth that some of the most ancient versions of civilization reside. These civilizations didn't necessarily go extinct or anything like that. They exist deep within the inner layers of the earth. Some of them are still physical. They have technologies, naturalistic and beyond, that allow for these inner earth realms they find themselves in to be very greatly illuminated. They're able to grow crops. They're able to simulate weather. They're able to do all types of things. So there are many ancient civilizations that dwell within the earth. Some of them still have a physical form. Some have gone through their own ascension process. Your modern humanity came from these inner earth civilizations. Many of you think of your Garden of Eden story as a story that takes place on the surface. This is not the case. Your species' Garden of Eden was the inner earth. You came out of the earth onto the surface. So there's other earths within your earths.
That's super interesting because something else that really fascinates me is the ant beings. And I understand they may not literally be ants, but the ant beings or ant people, as they're sometimes called, who live subterraneously and have much of this beautiful, luminous, advanced technology that you're discussing. And I understand that within the caverns, we'll call them, of inner earth in which they live, that they have something that is very akin to the tree of life. That this tree of life sometimes could be what they alluded to as the fountain of youth, that there's actually seeds that one could use, and God, I wish I could get my hands on some that heal and that do create, well, youth is beautiful, but anyway, that they have this tree of life. When you talk about the Garden of Eden, that's what I'm thinking about that it's analogous to.
Yes, exactly. So these types of miraculous plants and herbs, these things do exist deep within the earth. Just think of how exotic your Amazon rainforest is. And this is on the surface. All of the different drugs and chemicals that have been found and derived from plants in that forest, all of that pales in comparison to the ancient forests that exist within the planet. There are massive trees of life that surpass anything you have comparable on the surface. And some of these ancient trees of life act as the primary organizer for entire forest networks that span from the inner earth worlds all the way up to the forests of your surface. So there are forests beneath your forests, and there are much larger organisms. I know this may sound strange, but that which is inside of the earth, it's bigger. Larger organisms. So there are massive forests, massive beings. What you call the ant people, this is one of many of the ancient inner earth species. The ant people are not originally from Earth, but they have become stewards of the Earth through a long-term residence here.
Yes, I totally understand that. And I understand that they can, they're not needing their bodies, that they're able to, I don't even know the word because it's so beyond what our technology is here, but they're able to put themselves, let's say, in other realms, including the moon, that they may have built some bases there or some places for them to live within the moon. And I'm not sure if it's this moon that we look upon or the new moon that's been coming in that we learned about on Earth 2 years ago.
So this is the moon that you can observe in the night sky. That is their secondary residence. So there are different portals that exist within the inner earth realms that link those inner earth realms to various locations relevant to what you call Luna. So these beings have used those portals to access the moon. Keep in mind, there is an entire side of the moon that is unexplored. by your mainstream sciences. You call it the dark side of the moon. And this side most certainly houses structures, bases, beings. In addition to this, you have the inner world of the moon, of the lunar body. And this is where many of these bases have been constructed. They're a little bit more elaborate, and it allows for all types of experiences to be made available to the ant people that they would otherwise not really have access to if they were bound to the inner Earth realm. By being able to explore Luna, they are able to assist souls in a myriad of different ways. They have a role that is sometimes similar to that of the psychopomp, the being whom guides a soul from one lifetime to the next. Through their ability to also maintain a presence on the moon, they can play that role in a particular way. It also allows for them to play a very powerful balancing role that relates to the collective emotional body of your people. And they can do that in a superior way from the lunar bases than from the inner Earth ones.
Amazing. Fantastic. Thank you so much. I love this information. I want to switch a little bit to Peru and the Nazca lines that are located there. They stretch over 200 square miles. They have massive, precise glyphs. They're incredible. Do you think or know, were these lines, were these pictographs, were they intended as messages to ET visitors? Are they ceremonial maps or are they landing markers? What are they? What are they intended for?
They are meant to communicate messages to those above. These animals and symbols that are depicted are designed to represent universal archetypes, even though they are somewhat earthy in nature. Each of the symbols that are a part of the Nazca lines are meant to reflect a fundamental or underlying quality of the universe. So, higher beings with a higher intelligence be able to look at those lines and could recognize the description of a universal archetype, which means intelligent life is present. So it was a way to communicate attention and presence, those below to those above. It is also a way to summon specific energies through creating these images in such a large way. It is as if the collective consciousness energetically of that area now has that symbol sort of impressed upon it or tattooed upon it. And now that location acts as a beacon for the cosmic version of such energies. This is another function. In other instances, these lines were used as a type of landing strip, not just to attract attention, but to also direct attention towards certain locations on the planet.
Incredible. So the NASCAR lines, these are a gigantic pattern, big, gigantic artwork, and it's on the NASCAR plateau. Some of these figures are birds, they're spiders, they're animals, and there's even a straight line that's stretched out in all directions. It is thought or claimed to have been laid down more than 2,000 years ago. Do you know the date that these were created and by whom?
A little less than 10,000 years ago. And in terms of the civilization, you don't have a name for this civilization. So we have nothing in your language to even reference to talk about them, but they are pre-Inca. So it's older than what you consider to be one of the oldest civilizations. So remember that the Inca inherited a great deal of culture, technology, and civilization from those who came before them. So this is a part of those cultures that came before the Inca.
I'm just laughing because I'm thinking I enjoy this so much. I could literally take a cable from my mind into your etheric mind and plug myself in and be in total joy receiving all this information.
It's our joy to share it. We are very thankful that you have such an expansive imagination and love to dive into these very creative and ancient topics.
Yeah. You know, earlier you mentioned the beings that lived on Earth, and the various size. Some were our height, some were smaller, some were very, very small, some were tall, like quite tall. I imagine that one of the species you're talking about when you refer to quite people, quite tall people, were the Anunnaki. And we know a lot about the ancient history of the Anunnaki. I don't know anything about the current history of the Anunnaki. Can you give an update on them? Do they still exist? If so, where? And what is their connection to Earth's humans?
So, they play a incarnational role in their relationship with humanity in terms of modern humans. So, you are all familiar with the idea of a soul incarnating into a body, and they have a lifetime using that body. The Anunnaki are able to take their mind, and they can incarnate into 50 bodies simultaneously, 100 bodies simultaneously, because to you, they are gods. So one form, one human form is not enough to hold them. That's why in ancient times they had giant bodies. That's what was needed to support their energy. They could only have so many experiences in that form. So if they want to experience what it is to be human in that way, they must take on a human body specifically. But the human body is not designed to hold all of their energy. So they, in a sense, create separations within their consciousness. So it's like one piece of Inanna goes into this person, another piece of Inanna into that person, into that person, into that person, into that person, until all that energy is evenly distributed across a type of incarnational network. So the Anunnaki are all of you now, incarnating in human form. And not all humans are like this, but some are. And these are special people. Sometimes there is a sense that they have been touched by the gods or something. There's a type of eccentricity to them. They might have a type of focus that is from antiquity. So, not everyone meets this criteria, but there are some that do. But that is what the Anunnaki are up to. They're incarnating as many of you, so they can get to see what their creations are really up to.
Yes,
They're
because we are their children. Well,
exactly. Things are
genetically, we
different.
have several species in us, but Anunnaki is one of them. Well, at least they genetically masterminded or changed some of us, all of us, right? Which made us into hominids, humanoids.
You will find that what Anunnaki is to one person on your planet will be different than what it is to another. Anunnaki specifically is used as an umbrella term to represent the genetic founders, not just of humanity, but of many other species. And they are also said to be the ones that instigated or initiated civilization here on Earth. So there are many different types of beings that fall under that category, that umbrella category of Anunnaki. Because there are many groups that have come here, have inserted their genetics, and have guided the humans they helped to create in the establishing of some type of civilization or society. So, there's a few different ways to look at it, but in general, the idea of an original genetic founder and societal founder as a species or as a being.
Genetic founder, societal founder. I would like to ask you this question, and it's a really interesting conversation that I once heard. Actually, somebody, a human person, had with another Sasani. And this person was saying, why are there so many problems on this planet with the Jewish people? I mean, what gives? What did they ever do? And I thought it was a very beautiful question and a good question. And the Sasani being said, without a lot of details, because the Jewish people are connected with the Anunnaki. And there is something very relevant there. And although people on Earth are not conscious of this connection, there is a subconscious trigger that occurs between the Jews, the Hebrews, and the rest of, not all of humanity, obviously, but this is why there are these very interesting flare-ups, why throughout the history of the Jewish people, they have started in one country and been accepted and then suddenly had to gather as much as they could by foot and take off to another complete different country, learn the language, try to assimilate, be accepted, then the same thing happened all over again. They became, quote unquote, the devil, had to gather as much as they could and flee, or of course, it was genocide. Can you speak to that very point? Is there a connection with the Anunnaki? What is that connection, and why does it create so much trigger here?
Sure. So the Anunnaki came, established civilization, established many species, and then withdrew for some time to see what you all would do. See if you would pursue that original relationship, to see if the relationship would fade into the background, or to see if you would create something entirely different. But they withdrew and they watched. And what you call the character Abraham, this person from your Old Testament, this is one of the first people to make novel contact with the original Anunnaki, whom returned. So the nation of Israel was established through Abraham and his seed. That awakening of Abraham and his seed, this was mediated through the Anunnaki and their return. So, all humans in that sense are children of the Anunnaki. The Jewish people represent a specific lineage and group that has made a type of new energetic arrangement with the Anunnaki, the returned Anunnaki. And that creates a very special link, a very special connection. Not all peoples, not all groups established such a link, such a connection. So, this causes the DNA to have some extra power, some extra alignment, some extra geometry, causes that DNA to be more like the Anunnaki. So that stands out. It's like being in a room with someone who's almost more beautiful than you, or more capable than you, or more skillful than you, or higher up on the ladder than you. It can make some people uncomfortable. Genetically, energetically, that's one of the effects that has come from that energetic upregulation. Does this make sense?
Mamma mia. Yes, it does. It absolutely does. Is there anything that could, I'm Jewish, right? So is there anything that could be done to ameliorate that so that there is way more peace? I mean, I look at the Jewish people and I know even this conversation could be opening up so much for everybody. So God bless, peace on earth and all that. I just want to say, as somebody, as a Jewish person who's witnessed this, even as a father who is a Holocaust survivor, that's in a whole nother story what my father and his whole family went through. It's unthinkable. And what can be done? I think at this point, it's as a collective, so that this subconscious trigger or remembrance does not have to occur, but rather we can understand all of us, we all come from these roots, maybe a different strain, and just to allow these people to be who they are, because there's a lot of brilliance there. There's a lot of tremendous history there, culture, ritual, good food, all of it. So I'm looking for answers how that could be changed.
The key is inclusion, and the key is, of course, love. So, as you had mentioned here, you are all, in that sense, the children of the source. You are all, in that sense, the chosen people. When you choose to be yourself, and when you choose to bring forth that which is within you. So, through sharing this attitude of divine inclusion, through sharing this attitude and umbrella of love, all people are brought up in that network and no one is excluded. It is when people feel they are being looked down upon, when they feel they are being excluded, that they tend to react negatively to that which may be different. If those energies of inclusion and love can be projected and can be received, no matter what is experienced, it will be experienced through those qualities. So, even if there is some turbulence or some chaos or that which is unexpected that comes, it will still be smooth sailing. It will still be a good consequence. So, it is through the recognizing that all beings are children of the source that allows for that upgrade to become a global upgrade, not just in one genetic lineage, but in all genetic lineages. So, for those that have formed that particular type of covenant, because that's what it is, a covenant, for those that have agreed to that covenant, it is important that they continue to act as way showers across all areas of life that relates to human society. This is why the Jewish people made that covenant and relationship. They act as representatives, avatars for those Anunnaki light realms on the earth. So there's a higher degree of responsibility because they stand out more with those upgrades. So these are the types of things that are encouraged. It will create greater support, and it will also allow for those who look upon the Jewish people to do so in a way where there is greater unity and there is greater cooperation and there is greater collaboration.
I walk away from these conversations with beings such as yourself, and I feel a really deep kinship. I feel a friendship with you. What is the experience like for you connecting with me and our listeners?
It is similar in that sense. When we speak to you, at first we are speaking to the human you, Debbie, the shaman, the mystic, the guru, all of these things that are a part of your social identification. First, we interact with you, and it is this. But then, very quickly, as you begin to engage with us, immediately upon that engaging, your soul essence begins to shine in a way that is incredibly inviting. And when we speak to you, especially as the conversation progresses, we find we are speaking with a timeless friend. So it is in good conversation that one loses themselves. They almost forget they're having a conversation. And it's more like sharing a dream. And this is the type of connection we feel when we are speaking with you.
Well, that's quite beautiful. I received that. I have one last question before I let you go, sadly. I would like to know, has everyone on Earth had extraterrestrial contact and relations, but we don't all know it?
At least 90% of your species has had extraterrestrial communication, contact, energy exchange. Remember that your populations change. Older generations leave, newer generations come in. So usually it is every person on the planet. But of course, when new souls come in, and they incarnate, some time must pass before they are ready to have some of those experiences. While a human being is on Earth, especially in these times, there is almost 100% guarantee that they will have some form of contact. And yes, it usually is that you just don't remember. That is because most of the time, contact happens when you are dreaming. What you remember when you wake up from a dream is actually different than what you dreamt about. What you remember, this is your brain's way of organizing the dream world. So all of those ideas that you awaken with after a dream, these are just symbols your mind has picked that most greatly represent what the heck your energy body was up to. There are some things you're able to experience on the astral plane with extraterrestrial beings that you don't have symbol sets for here on Earth. So a lot of this stuff is unconscious for many of you. As your species internalizes the ancient esoteric systems of geometry and symbolism, you will find your intelligence and awareness expands. You will start to notice contact in real time when it's happening. You will be able to predict when it will happen, and you will be able to look back with clarity upon your path, and you'll be able to see when it has actually happened. So this is what you are moving towards. It's a matter of building your mind so that it is capable of perceiving the energies of contact and remembering it. So study geometry, study things like astrology, like the tarot, study things like the tree of life deeply. Take on
these underlying energies as a part of your normal operating system in your own way, and you will find you make leaps and bounds in your consciousness, and the contact will be obvious.
Ryo, rather than use words, I just want you to feel my transmission of energy and love right now for all you've given. The first time you came for incredible conversation, this really helps. And I'm sure if it helps me, it helps so many people to start to understand all these contextual ideas of what it means to be human, being on this earth, our real history, the beautiful cosmos and galaxy out there. And I just want to honor you for spending this time with us in this way.
We thank you so much for having us on once more. It is always a delight to be able to share our light and to assist in the ignition of your paths and their next levels of transformation and embodiment. Our gratitude and unconditional love to you all now and forever. Good day.
Good day. And I'm just going to gently speak while Tyler comes out and back. And I'd love to read your comments. I mean, first, I'm going to say I always have to nip it because there are so many more questions. The more we go, the more that opens. And I also want to say that this gave so much edification to me. I'd love to know what you learned from this. A takeaway, several takeaways. Let's see where there's resonance. And so, Tyler, welcome back. Oof.
Absolutely. Great to be back. Thank you.
That was next level. Seriously, next level.
Wow. It was like a big blur for me, and I'm thrilled to hear that. That always fills me with joy when people are like, you did great, man. Like a lot of insight, a lot of wisdom. I'm like, good, good, good. Half the time when I'm talking in the channeling state, I'm either completely tranced out. Or I'm like almost tranced out, but I'm watching myself talk and like feeling it without like being in control of it. So it's a strange kind of sensation. So sometimes it's like, does this make sense? Is this like, am I speaking English still? You know, and there's like that feeling of like, I hope this is working. So it's great to come out and to get that confirmation. So
I
thank you.
hope you're going to listen to this because my experience this time was Ryo was very much, well, I certainly with Wendy Kennedy, I could probably throw another name in there, but Wendy Kennedy is a great example. I don't know how many times she's been on and she's coming on again, but we started here and every time it was like this incredible expansion, first of connection, me with the being. It goes way deeper. And this beautiful zone, Ryo put it so incredibly, how we get lost in a conversation so much that it feels like a dream. And I could really relate to that. It could have gone on and on and on. And then also the depth of the information and where we're able to go also expands. So for you, allowing that capacity to come through, being the vessel for that brilliance. Thank you so
Oh,
much.
you're so welcome, Debbie. Thank you for this amazing creation. Bless your heart. This is my favorite thing to be able to do with people. So to have a space where I can share my gift and to have it celebrated and received by you and your audience, it really means a lot to me. So thank you for having me back on, and I'm looking forward for more. I imagine we'll do even more deep dives into the nature of these topics.
Yeah, because to have a being like welcome to my mind, it really is quite an experience. But I have so many questions constantly that I have to keep an ongoing list on my computer. When I can get with somebody like you, finally I can get to ask these questions. And then there's all this edification, I can relax, and then more starts rising up. It's a beautiful thing. Like I don't mind it at all, but I'm so grateful I have a place to go. This is truly the best classroom in life. And I want to ask you before you go, so folks know, I know your website is thegalacticguide.com. Where can people find you? What's next? What's going on in your world? People can connect with you
Yeah.
on.
So for people wanting to connect and to receive more channeling, esoteric knowledge, and things like this, you can find me on YouTube at Health Thyself. That's my YouTube page. We regularly have channeling videos uploaded. Almost every Friday, we're doing a Q&A live stream there. So that's for free. That's just for people to show up. They transmit their questions, and our host asks Rayoka the questions while I'm in the States. So that is Health Thyself. That's every Friday we have those streams. We also have a Patreon page, and that is the Galactic Guide on Patreon. Let me go ahead and actually get the proper URL here for you, what my thumbnail is on Patreon. So it should be the Galactic Guide 111. So if you go to patreon.com, it is the Galactic Guide 111 that will bring up my account there. And on Patreon, we are doing monthly special Patreon events. These are special transmissions only for the Patreon audience. And then we also do a special Patreon-only Q&A every Monday as well. So it's another opportunity to have questions explored. For online events, we're currently partnered with the Sasani Universe. My friend Starshine runs that page. And every month, we're doing a deep dive into one of 12 extraterrestrial civilizations. So we've been doing this over the course of the whole year. We just got through with Sirius on, I think, July 6th, we did that transmission. So I have to look to see what's coming up next for August, but we will have another civilization. Each transmission gives a mantra and a meditation symbol to help a person activate the genetic level that corresponds with the civilization that we're talking about. So the idea is the whole year, all 12 months, activates all 12 genetic aura layers. So the DNA having 12 layers of the aura. And those are the main things happening. I'm probably leaving like another five things out, but I don't want to overwhelm people here with just a list of different things going on. The email list and the website, the best place to stay tuned in with the happenings.
Beautiful. Okay. And this is Dare to Dream. What do you next dare to dream? Is there anything you haven't accomplished yet?
I haven't formal. Well, that's a really good question. I haven't published a book as an adult. I have been procrastinating writing a few books. I get 50% through. They're really good, and then I'm like, I don't want to finish it. So those are the big things on the list. It's funny you asked that though. I was asking myself that same question like yesterday. I was like, what the hell's like on my bucket list? Like, what's left? I was like jumping out of a plane. That's like, you know what I mean? Those are like the only few things left on the list. So I'm gonna savor them, most certainly. But right, finishing a book formally. I did it as a child. My mom got me like a young author's like book writing kit when I was like very small. So I technically have published a book at that level, but I have published no books as adult me. So that's probably the big one for what I'd like to accomplish, because I think it will snowball. Once I write one, I think I'll be able to continue that momentum.
And it is big. I just want to acknowledge it. I've been a professional book writing coach for a long time. I still have students and clients. And I know, because I know 85% of the people out there will never finish their book. And so it's very special when somebody can bring it through to fruition. So I am just sending you all my energy that you can do that. And it's great to have sort of a we challenge out in front of us so that we can work towards that and then know we got this. And I know I see you as a published author already.
Oh, thank you. It feels good. And so I know it's the right path. It feels good to be seen like that. I'm like, oh, that's a good feeling. So thank you. Thanks for bringing the future here.
Thank you so much to you, to Ryo, for coming on the show again. And yes, more in the future, please.
You got it. Absolutely. Thank you, Debbie. What an amazing time today.
I end today's show with this quote from Joseph Campbell: follow your bliss, and the universe will open doors where there are only walls. Subscribe to this number one transformation conversation, Dare to Dream with Debbie Dashinger. Leave a comment, please. I look forward to reading them. Like it, share it with folks who you know will love this conversation. Next week on the show, I am talking to an ET experiencer, Vincent Jenna. What a personality he has. He's got over 37 years' experience as a spiritual teacher, as a psychotherapist, psychic medium, and a mystic healer. It's going to be a blast, so be sure to join us then also. Thank you so much for joining us today on Dare to Dream. Wow, what a show.
Thanks for joining us this week on Dare to Dream. Make sure to visit our website, debbiedashinger.com. That's DEBBIDACHINGER. You can subscribe to the show on YouTube and all major podcast sites, so you'll never miss an episode. While you're at it, if you found value in this program, we'd appreciate a like and comment, or tell a friend about the podcast. That will help us out as well. And if you like this conversation, you might want to check out Debbie's shamanic healing programs. And Debbie is available for coaching to write your book, and her company takes your finished book to guaranteed international bestseller. Be sure to subscribe for our next episode of Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashner, your number one transformation conversation.